days that we enjoyed very much, and it began a journey that lasted for many, many years and continues even with the opportunity of us being here. We got to know a lot of people, got to be associated with a number of people, and for that we are certainly grateful. So let's go to the next slide, and we'll probably just stay here. In 1990, there was a movie made starring Richard Gere and Julia Roberts. It was entitled Pretty Woman, and it was Gary Marshall's Cinderella story about a wealthy businessman that fell in love with a prostitute. Roy Orbison, in 1964, wrote the theme song of that movie, what would later become that movie. He was, at one time, a member of the Church of Christ. This song was immediately a hit, and it was about a person who went from rags to riches, went from a person of ill repute to a person who attempted to try to be someone of prominence. Whenever I think about that movie, I think about Rahab. And whenever I think about Rahab, I think about that movie. We read about Rahab about six times in the Bible. We read about her in Joshua 2, in Joshua 6, in Matthew 1, Hebrews 11, and in the book of James. Rahab was a Canaanite woman. She was a harlot from Jericho. She was a person who possessed faith in God, and she protected two spies. She protected them by hiding them and by lying about their presence. Because of her faith and because of her kindness that she showed to those two spies, not only her but her family as well, their lives were spared, as we read in in Joshua, the sixth chapter. When we take a look at this account, when we read about this woman who went from broken to someone who was mended, we can, I think, learn the following lessons. One of the lessons that I think stands out very clearly to me is that this is an illustration of the purpose of miracles. We read, for instance, in Joshua, the second chapter, and beginning with verse 8. This is Rahab's account of how she came to believe in the one and true God. Now, before they lay down, she came up to them, talking about the spies, on the roof, and said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were on the other side, who utterly destroyed them. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted. Neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God in heaven, above, and on earth beneath. When we read about this account of how that Rahab came to believe, we understand something about what God has in mind when He produces miracles. If you'll notice in this account, Rahab never saw one single one of those miracles. She only heard about them. But she was fully convinced there was ample evidence that the miracles proved that there was one true and living God. So when she heard about that, she believed. Jesus said in John 20, verses 30 and 31, many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written that you might believe, and that believing you might have life through his name. One of the things that Nicodemus said of Jesus, he said, teacher or rabbi, we know that you're a teacher come from God, because no man can do the things that you're doing except he be from God. The purpose of the miracles was to demonstrate very clearly to the honest and sincere person that the message that was being presented was indeed from God. And so we see very clearly when we look at the life of the apostles, there was the necessity of having a miracle in order that they would know what to preach. And there was the need of the miracle so that those who were their listeners would understand that this is a message that comes from God. Whenever Philip goes down into Samaria and preaches, he preaches because of a miracle, because of the inspiration of God. But there is also the need of miracles to demonstrate to the Samaritans that the message is indeed from God. They do not have a New Testament to check out what Philip has to say. And so the purpose of the miracles is, in this case, is to give the person who's preaching the ability to preach without error, without addition, without subtraction. But it also gives those people that hear and see those miracles to know that the message that Philip is preaching is one that indeed comes from God. In Luke, the 16th chapter, you'll remember the account of the rich man and Lazarus. And one of the requests that the Lazarus has is to send, to raise Lazarus and send him back and give him a message that his brother not come to this place. The answer to that is no, that is not possible. And the answer is, though that this is a person that he goes to him, he says, if he will not listen to Moses and the prophets, neither will he be convinced if one is raised from the dead. So this sets forth the idea of the purpose and the role of miracles. It was for the purpose of confirming the word. We do not need miracles today because that word has already been confirmed. All that we need to do now is to believe and accept God's written record. And therefore, we understand and know what God's will is. One of the issues that we look at when we talk about Rahab the harlot is the idea, does God give approval to her lying? We know that she had the interest of the spies. And so she lies about where they are, lies to the soldiers that come looking for her, saying that, or from them, saying that they went that way when in reality they went the other way after they came down off the roof. So does God approve of lying? He does not. God does not lie, neither does he approve anyone lying. One of the things that we need to understand as we read the Bible is that it is an account of many things that people do. David committed adultery, but God does not approve of that. Abraham lied more than once, and he paid the consequences for doing that. One of the interesting things to note about what the New Testament writer says about what she does, for instance, in Hebrews, the 11th chapter, notice the exact wording. Here is the account: by faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe, because she received the spies with peace. Notice it was her faith, it was her receiving the spies with peace that God approved of, and is what is recorded here. It has nothing to do with her lying. God did not approve of that. Even Abraham and David and all of us, even if we have faith, we still have our weaknesses, we have our frailties, and we still do things that God has not approved of. One of the things that we also need to look at is in James, the 2nd chapter. Here again, James talks about what Rahab did. And it's interesting to notice that he refers to what she does along with what Abraham and what others do as well. Likewise, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way? She was not approved and she was not justified by her works because she lied. It was the other things that God recognized that was proper that she has been commended for. I think another important lesson for us to learn from the story, the beautiful story of Rahab the harlot, is the fact that God's redemption is always, has always, and still is the same today. Listen to what Romans 1 and 16 says. Paul says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ, for it is the power unto God, unto salvation, to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. And then he says, for therein is the righteousness of God revealed. That's not talking about God's righteousness. It's talking about the way by which God makes us righteous. How people were made righteous in the Old Testament, how people were made righteous in the New Testament, and how people are still being made righteous today. For therein, he says, it is from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. You take a look at Hebrews 11, where Rahab is mentioned. And the first person that is mentioned in that hall of fame is Abel. Right at the very beginning, by faith, Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. So what we see is that God is always save people by his grace, but it is through an obedient faith. And we see that in every one of the people represented in Hebrews 11th chapter. And we also see the same thing in reference to Rahab as well. Look at what is said in Hebrews 11th chapter, and notice how it is by faith that she is justified. It is that point that is very clearly outlined and set forth. Hebrews 11, verse 31, by faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe, who received the spies. So it is a matter of her believing, and then it is a matter of her acting on that faith, and she is obedient. Every person that you see that is justified in the Bible, whether it be in the Old Testament or in the New Testament, it is going to be the same pattern every single time. It is going to be by God's grace that we're saved, his amazing grace. It is going to be a person who then believes, but it is a belief that does like Rahab did. Here is Rahab, and what she does, she sees those spies, she protects them because she believes they represent the true and living God. One of the things that I think is quite unique about this story is that almost every time that you read about Rahab, she is always referred to as Rahab the harlot. And it's almost like she cannot get away from that identification. It is always there. And Joshua 2 and verse 1, she is called Rahab the harlot. In chapter 6 and verse 17, she is called Rahab the harlot. In 6 and 25, here again, she is Rahab the harlot. You come to the New Testament, and again, it is the harlot Rahab. It's there in Hebrews 11. It's there in James, the second chapter. It's like she cannot get away from what she has done in her past. I remember growing up as a young man, hearing my mother talk. My dad's first cousin was running for office down in Mississippi. He was running for circuit clerk, that office, and my mother was very upset because people were talking so horrible about him. He was an elder in the church, a very godly person, but people were still talking about him. And I remember mother saying, if you want to find out the worst about a person, let them run for public office. If you want to find out the best about a person, then go to their funeral. Well, here is Rahab the harlot. And one of the questions I want to ask you is this a put down? Or is this a story, a beautiful story of a reformed life? I was talking not long ago with a person who said, I did something terrible over 20 years ago. But he says, that keeps following me, and people just will not let it pass. Is that what's going on with Rahab? When the writers talk about this woman, and they keep on referring to her in that terms, is that what is going on? Let me tell you a story. And this story is a true story. And there are two ways to look at this story. You can look at it from the standpoint that it's a horrible story. It's one that tends to make you cringe. Or it can be a story of thanksgiving. And I think that's what it is. This happened in, this would have been in 1994. Some of you remember the ice storm that we had during the lectureship of 1994. During that period of time, after the lectureship that summer, we had living in our house our daughter and our oldest grandson, Zach. Zach started walking when he was about eight or nine months old. And Zach was one of those who loved to climb stairs. He could go up them like a squirrel. He had trouble coming down. He had to have help coming down. I remember being with him in a department store in the toy section, and I turned around and he was missing. And so I started looking for him, and I find him on top of one of those stair things that has the wheels on it as they move along to get to the merchandise. He's sitting up on the top of that thing, about 14 or 15 months old, just grinning from ear to ear like, look at me, see what I've done. Well, we're living in Ripley, Mississippi. I'm preaching for my home congregation. The church building is here, and we're living here, and it's the same on the same lot, just the parking lot between the two of us. And I'm keeping Zach in the morning. Carol keeps him in the afternoon. Our daughter she's doing her practicum, trying to finish at Fried Hardeman. And so one morning we decided, I said, Zach, let's go across to the church building. So we walked across the parking lot, went into the side door. And as you go into the side door, this is right here is the pulpit and the pews. The rest of the building is this direction. So I walk in the side door, and no more do I turn around, and Zach is missing. Where is Zach? Now, one of the things that you do as a parent and as a grandparent is you pray for wisdom, because you need a lot of it. And I don't know why on that particular occasion, but it's one of those things where I thought, first thing, baptistry. Because as you go open that side door, to the left is the door that goes into the dressing room, and then the stairs that go up. And I thought about those stairs. And so I go through there, and I go up the stairs, and there's that 16-month-old grandson floating face down in the baptistry. I pick him up, he coughs one time, and he's okay. Zachary graduated from Fried Hardeman about a year and a half ago. He finished three and a half years with honors. He played the goalie at Fried Hardeman for 4 years. It's all because on that occasion, by the grace of God, I was not distracted. I'm thankful that the phone did not ring. I'm thankful that there was not anything that kept me from immediately thinking stairs, baptistry. The next day, or maybe later that same day, I put a lock on all the baptistry doors. And I learned a very valuable lesson. Now, whenever you hear that story, you can look at it from two ways. You think, well, that's a horrible thing. Just imagine what could have happened. And you can dwell on that, and you can dwell on it, and you can dwell on it. But you can also think about that story. And every day, every time that I think of it, I say, thank you, Lord, for not allowing me to be distracted. Thank you for, and I don't know how it happened, I can't explain it, but I say thank you that I didn't wait. I didn't wait 5 minutes. I didn't wait any length of time. And I think that's the way it is with Rahab. You see, whenever you read in the New Testament about Rahab the harlot, are you talking about what a bad person she was? Are you talking about a person that's saved by the grace of God because of her faith? Or are you thinking about someone like Saul of Tarsus, who becomes the Apostle Paul? And what does he do? Next time you read those verses about where Paul says, I was a blasphemer and I was a persecutor of the God, of of the church of God. The young man holding the garments of those who stoned Stephen to death, beat him to death. Is Paul reliving the past? Is he feeling guilty? Or is Paul celebrating? Is he saying, that's the way I used to be, but by the grace of God, I am now what I am? And I think that's what's happening with Rahab. So you're not so much thinking about the kind of person that she used to be, as much as you're thinking about a person by the grace of God, that God allowed her to be that kind of person. Someone has said, don't judge me by my past. I don't live there anymore. But sometimes it's good for us to remember the past, even if it's a difficult thing to think about, because that gives us a compass to make us realize how far we've come and how very much we ought to enjoy the grace of God. Rahab the harlot, she becomes a believer. She's a Gentile, but she becomes a believer. And I want you to notice the promise that's made to Abraham in Genesis 12. God tells Abraham, I'm going to make of you a great nation. And in your seed, all nations of the earth are going to be blessed. And I will bless those that bless you. Rahab is one of those persons that God had in mind. Rahab was a Gentile. Rahab was a Canaanite. But she came to hear about God, the one and true living God. And with all of her heart, she believed. But she just didn't believe. She acted on her belief. She even risked her own life in hiding those spies. God said to Abraham, I will bless those that bless you. Rahab spoke well of the God of Abraham. And God blessed her. God blessed her because when the city of Jericho fell and every person lost their life, Rahab was spared, and Rahab's family was spared. You know, sometimes you live a life of faith, and it not only blesses you, but it blesses those you love very much. But what else takes place? One of the beautiful stories in the Bible is the story of Ruth. Ruth was also a Gentile. She was a Moabite. And you know the story. One of the most beautiful and touching things that you'll read in the Bible is how Boaz treated Ruth. Treated her with respect and with dignity. Boaz, even though a Jew, a Hebrew, Boaz treated this person who was a Gentile with the highest respect and highest regard. And one of the things you might ask is why and how did this wealthy Hebrew, how did he come to learn that and to do that? Well, if you take a look at Matthew 1 and verse 5, and Salmon begat Boaz by Rahab. And Boaz begat Obed by Ruth, and Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David. Why is it that Boaz is so good and kind? It's because of his mother. His mother was good and kind to those spies, and she taught that son to love and respect all people regardless of who they are. And because of that, not only Ruth, but Rahab both are mentioned in the lineage of Jesus Christ. God said, I will bless those that bless you. Rahab is a classic example of that very thing. We have before us a beautiful story of how one turns their faith toward God, and they live a life that is filled with works based on that. They're saved by the grace of God. but they're so richly blessed. And what is repeated in the story of Rahab can be repeated even today, because it is the very same principle today. Matthew West wrote the following words called Mended. When you see broken beyond repair, I see healing beyond belief. When you see too far gone, I see one step away from home. How many times can one heart break? It was never supposed to be this way. Look in the mirror, but you find someone you never thought you'd be. Oh, but I can still recognize the one I love in your tear-stained eyes. I know you might not see him now, so lift your eyes to me. When you see nothing but damaged goods, I see something good in the making. I'm not finished yet. When you see wounded, I see mended. You see your worst mistake, but I see the price paid. And there's nothing you could ever do to lose what grace has won. I see my child, my beloved, the new creation you're becoming. You see the scars from when you fell, but I see the stories they will tell. You see worthless, I see priceless. You see pain, but I see purpose. You see unworthy, undeserving, but I see you through eyes of mercy. When you see nothing but damaged goods, I see something good in the making. I'm not finished yet. No, when you see wounded, I see mended. I see mended. Oh, I see mended. I'm not finished yet. When you see wounded, I see mended.